The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Year in Review. TBJ reporters and editors refresh some of the biggest business stories of the year from their beats. And we'll get to those stories after Biz and the top news stories in this edition. But first, we start with Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Mebane Board says no to Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's has hit a snag for its plans to open its first store in North Carolina. Excitement was renewed for the chain of mega travel plazas to finally debut in the state with news that the Texas company was eyeing the Alamance County side of Mebane after previous plans in Orange County were dumped following a local outcry. But on December 11, the Mebane Planning Board recommended against land use changes that would allow a Buc-ee's to be built just south of the interstate at exit 152. The Mebane City Council could have the final say in early January with its own vote. After a nearly four-hour meeting, the planning board voted 6-3 to recommend the city council deny the rezoning request. Concerns were raised about compatibility with neighboring uses, particularly a youth sports field and Presbyterian church nearby outside the NC Commerce Park where the site is. NC Idea looks to boost small companies. If you're an entrepreneur who needs a little bit of help to get your big idea going, then NC Idea may be able to help. The support organization for entrepreneurs is already thinking about its spring grant cycle and kicking off information sessions around the state to highlight how growth-oriented companies can take advantage of its NC Idea Micro and NC Idea Seed grant programs. Micro grants award young companies $10,000 to validate and advance ideas, while the seed grants are $50,000. Capital companies with proven concepts can use to scale faster. There's a webinar information session January 16th and an in-person Triangle information session on January 19. Applications open January 29 and close February 26. It is known around the Triangle that access to capital is one of the biggest frustrations for entrepreneurs who have launched companies from the Raleigh-Durham region. While business formation is still at an all-time high, new investment vehicles pushed by successful entrepreneurs are emerging to support the ecosystem. NC Idea is an independent 501c3 with a focus on helping entrepreneurs develop high-value companies. It has given away more than $20 million since its beginning in 2005 and notes that 65% of its recipients are still in business. Want a chancellor? It will cost you a pretty penny. Kevin Guskowitz's decision to leave as chancellor of UNC Chapel Hill for Michigan State University underscores the rise in pay for university leaders. In 2011, Holden Thorpe earned a base salary of $420,000 as the leader of UNC. His predecessor, Carol Folt, earned $632,000 in 2017. Guskowitz earns $657,743, according to a UNC system database, while NC State University Chancellor Randy Woodson makes $704,832. But Guskowitz will earn $975,000 in base salary and get deferred compensation that brings his compensation to more than $1 million annually, according to the Lansing State Journal. He also gets a home on campus, memberships to clubs, travel expenses, and free tickets to all the Spartan sports and cultural activities. Oh, and a car with a driver. What's interesting is that these huge salaries are becoming the norm. According to a Chronicle of Higher Education database, there are 21 campus leaders making more than $1 million. Vincent Price, the president of Duke University, has a base salary of $1.53 million and a total package worth more than $2 million. Raleigh plant shop closing. A plant and gift shop that has been in downtown Raleigh since 2018 is closing as the owner says she's not seeing enough foot traffic to keep the business going. The Zen Succulent will close at 208 South Wilmington Street. Owner Megan George Kane says the Durham location is doing well, but that visitors in Raleigh are not going into small retail shops. Adding a small retail shop to downtown is a focus for the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. Downtown's community of retail businesses is starting to build, and I'm excited to see the next chapter, Kane says. We just did not see the right type of foot traffic of people wanting to spend on retail, and we didn't see people coming back to the office and picking up a gift here and there. I'm so pleased that they're adding that renewed focus on retail, but it's just too late for us, she says. Plant Sciences Building lauded. The massive Plant Sciences Building that opened at NC State University in 2022 is getting some love in an industry publication that focuses on design. The 185,000 square foot building on Centennial Campus is praised for its opening and welcoming experience to agriculture partners from across campus and across the state, writes Design Solutions magazine. The building has two research wings linked by a collaborative hub. FLAD Architects of Raleigh led the design. DPR Construction of Durham was the general contractor, and Stevenson Millwork Company of Wilson did the intricate architectural millwork. And finally, Raleigh Coffee Shop makes move. The Optimist, a popular Raleigh coffee shop, is in expansion mode. Shortly after announcing a new brick-and-mortar location in the Exchange Raleigh development, the brand has taken over Fiction Coffee. Fiction Coffee, a brand owned by the now bankrupt WeWork, recently closed its doors at its only Triangle location. The shop is located in Crabtree Terrace at 4509 Creedmoor Road, near Perry's Steakhouse and Crabtree Valley Mall. The Optimist is now open in its place, with little changes made to the space. The cafe will have a similar menu to its original location, with a food menu to be added soon. And now for the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one's written by Kaylee Thompson. 500 home project teases low prices in Knightdale community. A national home builder is working on a new community with hundreds of homes and a neighborhood commercial component in eastern Wake County, and some of the prices are eye-catching. D.R. Horton has proposed a mixed-use development with 500 townhomes and single-family homes and 15,000 square feet of commercial space in Knightdale. Named Linden Oaks, the development sits in a pocket where Interstate 540 is to the west and Interstate 87 is to the south. Site plans show there will be 192 townhomes, 174 rear-load single-family homes, and 134 front-load single-family homes. All of the homes will range in size, starting at 1,500 square feet for the townhomes and smaller houses, and up to 3,000 square feet for the larger houses. All of the homes will be for sale. Notes from a neighborhood meeting on the project show that the price range will be from $200,000 to $600,000, but that could change depending on the market. Year-to-date through October, the median sales price for a home in Wake County was $475,000. Linden Oaks will be on more than 170 acres across seven lots at 4313 and 4325 Old Faison Road, two unaddressed parcels on Old Faison Road, 940 Bethlehem Road, and an unaddressed parcel on Bethlehem Road, and 106 Tart Farm Road. The land has a total assessed value of about $6.1 million. The lots are owned by individuals. The community would be developed in four phases. Notes from the neighborhood meeting also reveal that construction on the first phase will start at the beginning of 2025, with homeowners moving into first phase homes by early 2027. The traffic impact analysis assumes a build-out of 2031. The neighborhood commercial piece will be low intensity with uses such as a daycare center, personal, professional, or medical services, a studio, bar, tavern, microbrewery, or a neighborhood retail or restaurant that is 2,000 square feet or less. It will be one single-story building on a 1.6-acre parcel along Bethlehem Road. What the commercial component will be is unknown, as D.R. Horton did not respond to multiple inquiries. The community will be on 171.88 acres, which will need to be rezoned. The proposed zoning would allow a density of 18 units per acre, but D.R. Horton is proposing only 3 units per acre. And our next story is written by Zach Ezone. Nighthawk divests subsidiary. Elusis Therapeutics moved to private firm owned by CEO Wolf. A biopharmaceutical company in Mooresville is moving on from a subsidiary as it transitions the business. Nighthawk Biosciences, on December 12, announced it has divested its subsidiary, Elusis Therapeutics, and other related assets. The company has also eliminated most of its research and development expenses as it focuses on a different part of the business. This is part of Nighthawk's strategic shift into a pure play Contract Development and Manufacturing Organization, or CDMO, through its subsidiary, Scorpius Biomanufacturing. CDMOs provide contract services to pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies. A private company established by Nighthawk CEO Jeff Wolf will acquire the company's divested assets, according to a statement from Nighthawk. A special committee of Nighthawk's board of directors negotiated the agreement with Wolf and his private entity, Elusis Holdings Incorporated, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. As part of the deal, this private company will assume Elusis's contracted financial commitments, which are estimated at more than $40 million. Nighthawk will receive an upfront cash payment of $500,000 and a $2.25 million convertible loan. Nighthawk will also receive royalties of 3% on all of Elusis's gross sales until June 30th, 2031. These royalties are subject to a mandatory minimum payment of $5 million during the first 5 years of the royalty term. The divestiture of these assets and cuts to its R&D expenses will lower Nighthawk's annual operating expenses by more than $13 million, the company says. This move will also eliminate Nighthawk's need to raise capital to support Elusis' programs. Nighthawk previously disclosed cuts to its R&D efforts, with the company laying off 13 workers, about 14% of its employees, in September. The transaction comes more than a year after Nighthawk, formerly called Heat Biologics, acquired all outstanding shares of Elusis as the company began its pivot into the biodefense space. Elusis's lead product is an anthrax antitoxin called Anthem. We also have a very significant and growing sales pipeline, which includes contracts from premier pharma and biotech companies, as well as leading research institutes, Wolf says. As we continue to grow our revenue and leverage our fixed costs, we expect our CDMO business to generate high margins and long-term profitability. At the end of September, Nighthawk reported cash of about $9.5 million. At the time of its latest quarterly report, the company said that its cash would fund operations into first quarter 2024. The company's stock has been trading well below $1. It closed at 31 cents on December 12. Developer spends millions for huge Apex project. This article is written by Ben Tobin. A Charlotte developer, spearheading a major project near the Wake-Chatham border, is spending millions acquiring more land for the development. Bin AG, an LLC tied to development group Beacon Partners, acquired about 14.2 acres of land in eastern Chatham County for more than $4.5 million on December 8, according to Chatham County deed records. That comes out to roughly $317,000 per acre. Beacon Partners has been spending millions to acquire land for Apex Gateway, a 380-acre commercial and industrial development at the western edge of Apex. In October, the group acquired roughly 10.4 acres for the second phase of the project for more than $1.45 million. And in June, the group acquired 42.22 acres in Chatham County for $4.4 million, which representatives said at the time helped complete the 132-acre first phase of the project. It's unclear how many more acres Beacon Partners plans to acquire for Apex Gateway's second phase. Representatives of the company did not respond to requests seeking comment. And our next news article is written by Lauren Onasorge. Documents give hints at Apple's RTP plans. Tech giant announced plans to ramp up in the Triangle back in 2021. The build-out for Apple's campus in Research Triangle Park is still years away, newly released documents show. A line item in a traffic study by engineering firm Kimley Horn, which references the multi-building project planned off Lewis Stevens Drive in Mooresville, says build-out is planned for 2026. The study, disclosed following a Freedom of Information Act request by Triangle Business Journal to Wake County, says the project has the potential to generate 5,550 new daily vehicular trips a day. That includes 787 during the morning commute and 735 during the p.m. peak hour on a typical workday, according to the study, which also says that commutes would be staggered to mitigate traffic congestion in the area. There are mitigation plans recommended by the report, such as an exclusive northbound left turn lane at Davis Drive and Little Drive, and a northbound U-turn lane at Davis Drive and George Watts Hill Drive. The report also recommends new intersections accessing the site at Little Drive with an exclusive left turn lane and traffic signals. The documents also include reports on topics such as culverts, stormwater conveyance, and wetland impacts, all indicating traction happening on the project behind the scenes. Called Project Bear by officials, the first phase includes a 41-acre development with six buildings and a parking garage, according to site plans obtained by TBJ earlier this year. Those plans, filed in May with Wake County, show there will be more than 700,000 square feet of office space, 190,000 square feet of accessory space, and close to 3,000 parking spaces. In the Kimley Horn documents, it says the Apple project is proposed to consist of up to 682,000 square feet of office and various employee support facilities. Regulators have had questions. In September, they asked officials with McAdams about landscape easements and buffers. McAdams updated its plans in response to some questions and said answers would be coming in the next few months to others. McAdams said it was working with Research Triangle Foundation on an approval letter. In 2021, Apple announced plans for an East Coast campus in RTP. The tech giant, headquartered in Cupertino, California, said it would invest $552 million and create at least 3,000 jobs, paying an average of $187,000 a year. But information has been sparse as Apple hasn't publicly commented on its plans since the announcement. But Apple has started hiring locally and has leased office space in Cary and Durham to use in the interim while the RTP campus is built. The company has been busy building out its leased office space. Apple has filed multiple permits for construction work at those offices totaling millions of dollars. Top architecture firm to leave Fayetteville Street. LS3P seeks more space, will move to Smoky Hollow next year. This article is written by Laura Brumette. The architecture firm with the largest presence in North Carolina is making a big move in downtown Raleigh at a time when the city's core faces an unclear future. LS3P, an architecture, interiors, and planning firm, is leaving its longtime office space on Fayetteville Street for a newer building downtown. The Charleston, South Carolina-based firm has the highest number of registered architects in both North Carolina and the Triangle area, according to data compiled by the Business Journals. LS3P will nearly double its office footprint in Raleigh by relocating its more than 80 employees next year to Smoky Hollow. The firm has been at its current space on Fayetteville Street in the Truist 2 Hanover Square building for 18 years. The new space is in Kane Realty's mixed-use development on the edge of Glenwood South. LS3P will fill 20,000 square feet, about two-thirds of the seventh floor, in the 421 North Harrington office building. Its current office space is about 12,000 square feet. The move will be another blow for the city's central business district around Fayetteville Street, which continues to face diminished foot traffic combined with concerns about crime and homelessness. The ongoing issues are leading some business owners to consider leaving the area, and Raleigh has responded with an increased police presence and private security. LS3P began the hunt for new space about 2 years before its current lease's expiration. That's the timeline now recommended for searches, JLL Managing Director Kimari Ankenbrand says. She and Matt Winters represented LS3P in the lease transaction. The firm has outgrown its space and wanted an office layout that promoted collaboration, says Steve Hepler, leader of the LS3P Raleigh office. We looked at probably 10 or 12 potential locations around downtown and midtown and narrowed that down to 5 or 6 right around the downtown area, Hepler says. Our number one goal is to stay downtown. We've been downtown since 2005 and like it and want to stay there. Some of the older properties in the Fayetteville Street area have the same floor plan layout as LS3P's current office space, which didn't fit the firm's design or desire for an open layout, Hepler says. The firm also looked at properties in the Hillsborough Street corridor and in Raleigh Ironworks along Atlantic Avenue. But Smoky Hollow checked more of the firm's boxes, Hepler says. The food and beverage retail tenants already open and signed on for the project were a major factor, and the project's proximity to hotels and public transportation was a plus, he says. A strong selection of nearby restaurants and retail are now a major factor in lease transactions, Ankenbrand says. With the additional space, LS3P has plans to grow its Raleigh operation. The Smoky Hollow space will have room for 100 employees. The firm is planning to hire mid-level staffers. And our next article is written by Ben Tobin. Plant Switch plans Sanford growth. Manufacturer looks to add jobs after $19 million raise from multiple sources. While researching plastic waste as an investment banker, Dylan Brooks had an epiphany. He should start a company that focuses on creating plastic alternatives for customers. Teaming up with fellow Southern Methodist University golf teammate Maxime Blandin, Brooks, a 26-year-old from Austin, Texas, co-founded Plant Switch, which makes plant-based alternatives to plastic and has raised $19.5 million in less than 2 years through venture capital, private equity, and federal grants. This year, the company planted roots in North Carolina and launched a 52,000-square-foot manufacturing facility in Sanford, one of the hottest submarkets in the Research Triangle area. We're really excited to have a technology that is not only affordable and actually works like a plastic product does, but it's also truly sustainable and biodegradable in pretty much all natural environments, Brooks says. Brooks, the CEO, says all the stars aligned with creating a production facility in Sanford. He and Blandin had been interested in the North Carolina market due to the business and agriculture climate, and the vacant building matched what they sought. According to private market data provider PitchBook, funding for Plant Switch includes, but isn't limited to, more than $4.9 million grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, $750,000 via convertible debt from Some Ventures of California and other undisclosed investors, and $7.7 million via convertible debt from alternative investment company Next Point of Dallas and other undisclosed investors. Brooks expects the fundraising to pick up in the coming year, anticipating the group can garner $15 to $20 million in additional capital. He also says he expects revenue to be north of $12 million next year. Plant Switch currently employs 13 people, but Brooks says he expects that number to increase to 50 in the coming years as the company grows. Currently, the company has plans to produce products for several Fortune 500 companies. Brooks declined to specify the identity of those companies, saying he can make the information public at the start of next year. As for the future, Brooks says taking the company public definitely seems like a feasible outcome for us, he says. Over the next decade, Plant Switch aims to turn 1 billion pounds of plants into bioplastic material, according to Brooks. We do have an industry-leading model in cost and performance in comparison to other plastic alternatives, while also being truly sustainable, Brooks says. And the next article is by Zach Ezone. Duke Health adds Chapel Hill physician practice. A small group of doctors in Chapel Hill is joining a physician practice connected to Duke Health as consolidation in healthcare continues. Carolina Ophthalmology Associates will next year become part of North Carolina Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat, or NCEENT, which is a Duke Health integrated practice. The move will bring Carolina Ophthalmology Associates 3 providers and 6 team members to NCEENT, which joined Duke Health in 2019. The addition brings another location to the 5 that NCEENT already operates in the Triangle. By joining Duke Health, patients at Carolina Ophthalmology Associates will have expanded access to ophthalmology care and the full range of services provided by NCEENT, including otolaryngology, audiology, and speech-language pathology, according to a Duke statement. Between 2012 and 2022, the share of physicians in the U.S. who work at practices they wholly own dropped from 60.1% to roughly 46.7%, according to data from the American Medical Association. Meanwhile, the share of physicians who work at practices with at least some hospital ownership climbed from 23.4% to 31.3%. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the 2023 year in review on the reporters' pages. We start with Ben Tobin's. VinFast has mixed year. Vietnamese car manufacturer has big plans for Chatham County. Coming fresh off its North Carolina honeymoon in 2022, Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer VinFast saw an up and down 2023 as the company suffered setbacks while also achieving big milestones. In March 2022, VinFast announced the biggest project the state has ever seen, a $4 billion factory at the Triangle Innovation Point megasite in Moncure that could create 7,500 jobs in Chatham County. Originally, the factory was supposed to come online in 2024, but VinFast announced in March that it wouldn't be opening the factory until 2025. We need more time to complete administrative procedures, the company spokesperson said. 2 months later, American critics released unflattering reviews of the VinFast VF8, one of the key models it plans to sell in the United States. A journalist with Motor Trend magazine wrote in May, "I've driven camouflage prototypes that were far closer to production ready than the in-production VF8. But as summer rolled around, so did some momentum for VinFast. First in August, a celebratory atmosphere permeated Moncure as VinFast finally broke ground on its plant. After the ceremony, which included executives of the Vietnamese company and North Carolina elected officials, VinFast Global CEO Lee Phi Thu Thai defended the company's financial footing and expressed confidence in the future. "We have a clear vision about what we do," he said. "There's nobody else that has a whole lineup of vehicles. We have all the ingredients, but it takes a lot of hard work. There will be a lot of challenges along the way, but people need to recognize we've come a long way since 6 years ago." And that was when the company was founded. The news continued coming for VinFast as it merged with SPAC, Black Spade Acquisition Company, and opened on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange in August. The stock quickly climbed close to $40 per share, leading to headlines that VinFast was worth as much as Ford and GM. In late August, it was around $80. But things have petered out quite a bit. As of mid-November, VinFast stock hovered around $6 per share, and the company continued a troubling trend of hemorrhaging money. Through third quarter 2023, VinFast lost $1.7 billion, already outpacing their losses for 2022 and 2021. Moore County gets ready for U.S. Open in 2024. Moore County has not hosted one of golf's greatest tournaments since 2014. Next year, not only will the U.S. Open Golf Championship return to Pinehurst No. 2, the year will also showcase the U.S. Golf Association's commitment to the Sandhills region. The USGA announced in 2020 it would build a second headquarters in the village of Pinehurst, and construction has been ongoing to ensure U.S. Open attendees can see all the new amenities. Included in the new USGA headquarters is an equipment testing facility, an innovation hub, museum, visitor center, and offices. The new headquarters at the historic Pinehurst Resort will employ 50 full-time staff. There's no better place for the USGA to plant new roots than the home of American golf, Mike Davis, then CEO of the USGA, said in 2020 when the project was unveiled. Beyond 2024, Pinehurst No. 2 will host the U.S. Open in 2029, 2035, 2041, and 2047. Moore County certainly reaped the benefits when the Open was last held at Pinehurst in 2014. The total economic output from the back-to-back U.S. Open and Women's Open championships in June 2014 generated more than $238 million of economic output. And finally, Reeves Farm looks to be the next big Chatham County community. Move over Chatham Park, the next big mixed-use community in Chatham County is well on its way. Reeves Farm, a nearly 500-acre proposed mixed-use development that will include more than 1,500 homes and a variety of restaurants, grocery stores, entertainment spots, and trails, received rezoning approval from the Pittsburgh Board of Commissioners in November, giving it the green light to move ahead and make major progress in 2024. Edward Holmes Jr., Carter Keller, and Buddy Keller, Carter's father, who are active developers in the Greater Triangle, in December 2022 purchased 494 acres of what is currently a farm for nearly $19.6 million to be used for the project. In a presentation to the Pittsburgh Planning Board in July, Holmes said that he wants to integrate the development into the character of Pittsburgh. "I'm looking at it a lot differently than an out-of-town developer would because I have a personal interest and I have friends that live here," Holmes said. "I don't want to be embarrassed by having something that they come back and say, 'You really messed up this town.'" Also in Chatham County, Turkey Creek, a roughly 140-acre mixed-use community with more than 300 planned housing units, also received rezoning approval in November. And in the 7,100-acre Chatham Park development, more houses and other projects continue to pop up. That includes plans for a new Disney-themed community called Asteria. And now we turn to Lauren Onosorge's 2023 Year in Review. First Citizens rescues SVB. Stock for Raleigh Bank shoots up in massive year after acquisition. First Citizens' year started with industry turmoil and ended with the Raleigh Bank being on top, quite literally. While some bank stocks have had a trying year, First Citizens' shares had leapt more than 86% year-to-date as of mid-November. The bank, long led by the Holding family, took a chance on monetizing that turmoil, and so far it's paying off. In March, as a trio of bank failures was causing uncertainty in boardrooms everywhere, the Holdings prepared a plan. Within weeks of the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, First Citizens bought its assets from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. First Citizens, not necessarily well known outside of Raleigh, was thrust into the national spotlight. Multiple entrepreneurs and venture capitalists said they knew nothing about the Raleigh Bank. For years, they've done business with SVB, a niche institution that just got them and their entrepreneurial mindset. How would First Citizens, a local bank with a conservative reputation, keep their business? First Citizens president Peter Bristow says it had to be a quick learning curve, creating stability within a client base of a very unique bank, but he says the commonalities were always there as both banks were relationship driven. We're 125 years old. We've built it one relationship at a time, Bristow says. And it appears to be working. At the bank's earnings call in October, CEO Frank Holding Jr. said the outlook was positive. While U.S. VC firms' investment levels may continue to fall in the near term, we believe the long-term outlook remains positive, primarily related to tailwinds that remain intact despite the most recent dislocation, he said. He added that while valuations of 20 and 21 are likely over for some time, if ever, there is substantial dry powder waiting to be invested, which gives us confidence in the long-term prospects of the innovation economy. First Citizens has done this before, including FDIC-assisted and open market deals such as CIT Group of New York. That's 20 institutions since 2009. Many large banks have no experience with failed bank assets, which is why First Citizens has a distinct advantage, says Chris Marinac, Director of Research at Janney Montgomery Scott. Wolfspeed sharpens focus on silicon carbide, Siler City efforts. Wolfspeed showed the Greater Triangle how bullish it is about a planned 18,000 job, $5 billion materials plant planned for Chatham County. It started last year after months of negotiations. The Durham semiconductor firm picked Siler City over a competing site in New York, swayed in part by a state incentives package worth more than $159 million. And Wolfspeed has, at least so far, delivered. The plant, expected to cover more than 1 million square feet at completion, broke ground earlier this year and is already hiring. CEO Greg Lowe said on an earnings call in October that the plant is on track to produce material in the first half of fiscal 2025. We've already hired and began training more than 100 people that will work at the facility, Lowe said. And the company made some serious moves in 2023 to align its business toward the next generation semiconductors it plans to pump out. In August, Wolfspeed announced plans to sell its 280-employee radio frequency operation to Maycom Technology Solutions Holdings, a deal worth $75 million in cash and $50 million in Maycom stock. In a statement, Lowe said, "Given the significant growth we've seen in automotive, industrial, and renewable energy markets, we believe this is the right time to further focus on scaling our power device and materials business to meet this accelerated demand. It's all about going all in on silicon carbide, the materials it's growing in Durham, and will soon grow in Chatham County. Boosted by the electric vehicle market, there's a supply-demand mismatch," Lowe says. "There will be more demand than there will be supply, certainly over the next couple of years and probably longer than that," he told analysts in October. And finally, RDU eyes more growth as new runway planned. After years of lobbying, Raleigh-Durham International Airport clinched federal approval this year on a new international runway. The airstrip, planned to be 10,639 feet, has been called the most important stretch of pavement in the region, as West Coast and Transatlantic service depend on the runway. Construction is set to start in 2024. Airlines are already betting on the planned success, as notably German carrier Lufthansa announced plans to bring a nonstop flight to Frankfurt in 2024. It's a big win for RDU, where other transatlantic flights include nonstops to Paris, London, and Iceland. Dirk Jansen, vice president of the Americas for Lufthansa, says the $3 million in incentives approved in the recently passed state budget helped clinch the deal, but none of it would be possible without the certainty of a future runway that, thanks to that federal approval, is one step closer to becoming a reality. The current runway at 10,000 feet long has been nearing its expiration date for years, and it has been an effort to keep it functional for entrants like Lufthansa, who don't want to wait 7 years for the new runway to open. As of October, RDU had replaced 275 concrete slabs and spent about $300 million just to keep it functional. Another 300 slabs are expected to be replaced over the next 7 years to keep RDU's operation going. The original slabs in 1986 were built with a limestone mix that's no longer in use because it is subject to a chemical reaction that can degrade the surface. And now we turn to Kaylee Thompson's 2023 year in review. Developers walk away. Dilwig others hand over office space as vacancies remain. Triangle office landlords, slammed by remote work, low occupancy rates, and the tight lending market, are unloading office buildings in a brutal year for the office market. Landlords have struggled to make loan payments or reach agreeable refinancing terms with lenders, forcing some to return the office buildings. Dilwig handed over RDU Center 3 in Morrisville to the lender in August after defaulting on loan payments, according to Wake County deed records. The deed shows that after Dilwig gave the building back to First National Bank, the bank then started foreclosure proceedings leading to a public auction. Minnesota's O'Brien Staley Partners offered the highest bid at the August 25 auction. The firm bid $12.5 million for the building, which, combined with the land, is assessed at approximately $23 million. O'Brien Staley sued Dilwig in November for the remaining loan payments. Another building worth a fraction of its previous value is the 10-story building at 227 Fayetteville Street in Raleigh. 10X auctioned it online in November with a starting bid of $5.5 million. It was sold by the lender, PNL Companies of Dallas, after the previous owner deeded the building back to the lender earlier this year, according to Wake County deed records. Lou Mashakas bought it for $14.7 million. The office building has an assessed value of $11.49 million, with a combined land and building value of about $15.45 million. The overall office vacancy rate crept up to 14.5%, according to TBJ's space data. Landlords have faced multiple headwinds as companies vacate space and few follow behind to fill in. Fidelity Investments moved out of the Danbury Hall at 5411 Page Road in March, according to Robin Roseberry Anders, executive vice president with NAI Tri Properties. The Boston company, which says the move is meant to consolidate office space, had leased 116,300 square feet, the entirety of the building, in the Imperial Center Business Park. Fidelity had used the space since 2015 and had a lease until 2025, but Fidelity chose to use a termination agreement allowing the lease to end in March. Highwoods Properties of Raleigh sold two office buildings this year, the River Birch Building in the Research Triangle Park for $20.7 million and 5000 Falls of Neuse Road for $11 million. An LLC with a Boston address linked to Fidelity Investments bought the River Birch Building, according to Durham County deed records. The LLC made an all-cash transaction to purchase the building, which is fully leased by Duke Health. Big plans remain just renderings for now. As the financial markets tightened, real estate companies found it difficult to get projects off the ground. In fact, there were no new groundbreakings in 2023 on big commercial real estate projects in the Triangle. As what had been a red-hot market cooled, there were a number of projects that were supposed to break ground, but rising construction costs and interest rates led developers to hit the brakes. For example, Kane Realty's downtown South District was supposed to break ground in the spring, but the project continues to wait for financing. But in Glenwood South, the huge Creamery development is back on track after being on hold due to a permitting and payment issue. Turnbridge Equities anticipates starting construction in mid-2024, beginning with the 36-story residential tower. The two-tower project also includes a 20-story office tower and preservation of the Creamery building at 400 and 410 Glenwood Avenue. Blue Ridge Realty had originally planned to start construction on an 11-story residential tower and 12-story office tower in 2022, with an opening date in 2024, but the seven lots for the project, including the site of Cornerstone Cafe, sit undone. Blue Ridge Realty President Joe Meir says that not only has the project changed, but the Raleigh company is also in a holding pattern due to the status of the financial market for commercial real estate. And finally, smaller towns transform downtown districts. The smaller towns around the Triangle are looking to the future and envisioning what their downtowns can look like as their populations grow. It's a trend that is redefining the Triangle, as towns once known more as bedroom communities are adding amenities and options in the core areas. The booming town of Cary put out a request for qualifications in May to construct a mixed-use development along Academy Street and Chapel Hill Road. The project would reshape the property that includes Town Hall into a residential and commercial space designed to blend with the growing vibrancy of the fast-growing community. Ted Boyd, Cary's Director of Economic Development, says the town aims to develop uses consistent with development already occurring in the area and support the increasing number of people who live and work downtown. The project would likely include residential, office, and retail space, public amenities, and possibly a hotel. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Laura Bromet's 2023 Year in Review. Omni is Raleigh's pick. Omni will put a luxury hotel on Fayetteville Street. After a year-long search, the city of Raleigh picked a hotel group based in Dallas for a major hospitality project. Omni Hotels and Resorts is set to build a luxury hotel downtown, promising an upper upscale atmosphere. The hotel will sit on a single-acre lot on Fayetteville Street near the Raleigh Convention Center and the Martin Marietta Center for Performing Arts. The property is owned by the City of Raleigh. Omni was the winner of a request for information or RFI process conducted by JLL on behalf of the city. The Omni Raleigh Hotel will have 550 guest rooms and 55,000 square feet of meeting space, along with a rooftop pool, a spa, fitness center, and several food and beverage outlets. It's expected to open in 2027. Raleigh doubles down on Convention Center. In a somewhat related article, the city of Raleigh is doubling the size of the Raleigh Convention Center in a $387.5 million bet on the future of the facility. The current building, built in 2008, isn't fully booked, and the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau says the fix is to double its size. The money, coming from an interlocal pool of Wake County hospitality tax revenue, will be used to expand the Convention Center and relocate Red Hat Amphitheater. The expansion will take the center from 500,000 square feet of space to around 1 million square feet. That would open up the center to a pool of larger prospective clients, putting Raleigh in the same ring as convention hubs such as Anaheim, California, and Dallas. But to accommodate conventions of that size, thousands more hotel rooms would need to be added within walking distance. That's what's driving the city's investment in the Omni Hotel for Fayetteville Street. But those 550 rooms still won't meet the demand for a center of that size. Downtown has 1,790 hotel rooms already in the pipeline, not including the Omni. But those projects are not located close enough to the convention center, according to the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. Large events have picked up in Raleigh in recent years, with the need for leisure travel to account for a loss in business travel during the pandemic. Events such as the Dreamville Festival continue to bring thousands of visitors annually, though the festival is held at Dix Park. And finally, Advance Auto struggles through a tough 2023 revamped C-suite. Advance Auto Parts, Raleigh's only Fortune 500 company, has seen a tumultuous 2023. The year began with CEO Tom Grieco announcing his retirement. The announcement came as concerns about the company's performance began to mount, with sentiment rising to a crescendo after Advance Auto's first quarter earnings report in May. The company missed earnings estimates, lowered its guidance for the year, and lowered its dividend. Advance Auto shares dropped by 36% in one day. Since then, Advance Auto has continued to worry analysts and shareholders with its earnings results. Shares opened at $55.73 on December 6, down from $180 last November. It was booted from the S&P 500 in August due to its diminished market cap. Advance Auto also announced the departure of Chief Financial Officer Jeff Shepard in August. Grieco left in September, replaced by Shane O'Kelly, who previously served as CEO of HD Supply and graduated from the U.S. Military Academy. The third quarter earnings results in November missed analyst estimates again, and hard decisions followed. Alongside its earnings, Advance announced a new CFO, the elimination of an executive position, and about 400 layoffs. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's Year in Review page. Cineos acquired for $7.1 billion. Cineos goes private, changes CEO as it looks for a turnaround. One of the Triangle's largest public companies went private in 2023 as the region lost yet another headquarters for a major public company. A consortium of investment firms, including Elliott Investment Management, Patient Square Capital, and Veritas Capital, acquired Cineos Health for $43 per share in a $7.1 billion deal, taking the Morrisville company private. Cineos had been the Triangle's sixth largest public company, trailing only Martin Marietta, First Citizens, Wolfspeed, Enact Mortgage Insurance, and Vontier. Earlier, large Triangle public companies such as Quintiles, now ICVIA, Red Hat, IBM, and Progress Energy, Duke Energy, were acquired. The deal came as Cineos struggled to secure new business on the clinical side of its operations. After hitting revenue of about $5.4 billion in 2022, Cineos, as of early 2023, expected its annual revenue to drop between 4 to 7.8%. With this projected decrease, Ineos began slashing costs, which included, quote, right-sizing and realigning, unquote, its workforce while streamlining its organizational structure. In an October statement announcing the closing of the sale, Ineos said the transaction would accelerate its transformation and fuel investments in technology. After the deal closed, Ineos named Colin Shannon CEO, replacing Michael Keefe. Keefe, who became CEO in early 2022, was moved to the executive leadership team. Bankruptcies, job losses plague life sciences sector. Financial pressures this past year led to widespread layoffs and even some bankruptcies throughout the Triangle's life sciences industry. More than a dozen biotechnology, pharmaceutical, and medical device companies cut jobs in 2023. These cuts happened at companies of all sizes, from global firms generating billions of dollars in revenue to small startups trying to bring their first products to market. Pfizer in October confirmed plans to shut down operations at facilities in Morrisville and Durham. This was part of a broader cost-cutting effort as it sees a steep drop in demand for its COVID-19 products. Pfizer would not say how many jobs would be affected by the closures, but its gene therapy manufacturing facility in Durham was projected to employ nearly 100 people. The gene therapy firm Atsina Therapeutics trimmed its workforce despite raising about $24.5 million. Another gene therapy firm, Opus Genetics, also scaled back its workforce and shifted its plan to focus on its two lead assets. Triangle Business Journal confirmed nearly 900 job cuts at companies either headquartered or with significant operations in the Triangle. This doesn't include numerous companies that scaled back without disclosing details. One of the largest layoffs came from Medigago, a Canadian vaccine developer that shuttered operations in February. It closed a manufacturing facility in Research Triangle Park, leading to the termination of 164 employees. And finally, Blue Cross NC says changes will make it more nimble. The state's largest health insurer began reshaping itself in 2023. Over the summer, the General Assembly passed legislation allowing Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina to create a separate nonprofit holding company that would serve as the parent to the 89-year-old insurance organization. Blue Cross NC says the reorganization will allow the parent company to move faster while making investments in the hyper-competitive healthcare industry. Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey opposed the legislation and argued it would allow the parent company to operate without as much oversight from the Department of Insurance. The legislation nonetheless quickly passed the legislature, and Governor Roy Cooper signed it June 9. This reorganization wouldn't change the types of investments that Blue Cross NC makes, Chief Financial Officer Mitch Perry says. Instead, this process is supposed to give it more flexibility in making timely decisions on acquisitions and investments. This is about market speed and flexibility, Perry says. We have to seek approval for most investments depending on the type of structure. Those are limitations that other insurers don't have. Blue Cross NC moved quickly after the legislation passed. In October, it reached a deal to acquire all North Carolina locations of the urgent care company FastMed. The deal comes about 10 years after Blue Cross NC made an initial investment in FastMed. Since then, the health insurer has maintained a non-controlling minority investment in the company, which is headquartered in Raleigh. And now we have a year-in-review update from Dane Huffman. Canes sign up for the long haul. Hockey team's deal transformative for Blue Ridge Corridor. The long push to transform the Blue Ridge Corridor in Raleigh hurtled into a new future this year when the Carolina Hurricanes and the Centennial Authority signed a new long-term deal. The agreement locks in the team through 2044. After decades of lagging development, the area finally is poised to emerge as a key entertainment district. The agreement is only part of the revitalization of the area. Bandwidth has moved into its new headquarters, and the new headquarters for the NC Department of Health and Human Services is rising across from the NC Museum of Art. Jeff Murison, the CEO of the Hillsborough Street Community Service Corporation, which has worked on the Blue Ridge Corridor's evolution, calls the deal enormously transformative. Without question, it will be the largest economic development project in the city's history, he says. But even Jeff Merritt, executive director of the Centennial Authority, notes that the development piece is still the cloudiest of the pieces. But what is clear is that Canes owner Tom Dunnan will develop the land around the arena. In phase one, Gale Force, the Canes' parent company, commits to develop commits to develop at least 100,000 square feet of retail and dining space, 150,000 square feet of office space, 200 multifamily residential units, and a 150-room hotel. Gale Force also commits to spending an estimated $40 million on a new enclosed music venue that will seat 3,000 to 5,000 people and be adjacent to the arena. Gale Force's investment over 20 years would be at least $800 million. Now we have an update from reporter David Pertell. Big announcements cool off. North Carolina lands far fewer major job deals than in previous years. After a record streak of winning large economic development projects in 2021 and 2022, North Carolina didn't have as much to cheer about in 2023 in terms of individual companies investing hundreds of jobs in the state. As the economic landscape has cooled and financial markets have tightened, the scale of economic development investments has become smaller as companies hit the brakes on spending. For North Carolina, the big project announcements were few and far between this year. Newly approved state incentives in 2023 were linked to around 3,700 jobs through mid-November, according to data from the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Compare that to more than 15,000 in 2022 and nearly 14,000 in 2021. In the Triangle, the year started off hot, with Chem Power announcing 300 jobs at a new facility in Durham. The European company makes charging equipment for electric vehicles, a sector that's growing fast in the state. In June, auto dealer Auction Direct USA said it would create 173 jobs in Oxford at a new facility that will recondition vehicles to sell to both wholesale customers and at Auction Direct locations. But that was about it, and some companies even pulled back on plans to expand locally. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Some Intriguing Stories Stood Out in 2023. It's a win when you don't start this year-end column talking about the effects of COVID. I've done that for the past 3 years. But in 2023, at least the second half of the year, felt like we were done talking about the pandemic, supply chain woes, and watching the prices of everything go up. Still, nestled among all the headwinds in the form of the Russian-Ukraine war, the Israel-Hamas conflict, and the auto and entertainment industry strikes, a few stories emerged in the Triangle that could become even bigger news in years to come. Only time will tell. As you sift through this week's issue to read the latest on some of the biggest stories of the year across several industries, I picked five stories that I want to follow in the coming years. First Citizens and Silicon Valley Bank merger. When the deal was announced early in the year, it would be an understatement to say I found minimal cultural similarities between the two banks and wondered how exactly First Citizens could hold on to SVB's $56 billion in deposits. SVB executives were cutting deals while dining at the French Laundry, and First Citizens' roots are embedded in the bank's culture of conservatism and being risk-averse. So far, Wall Street says First Citizens has managed to hold on to about $40 billion of SVB deposits. To me, that frankly is a shocker, but 2024 will be a far more of an active year for those deposits, and if First Citizens can keep and grow that line of business, the government surely will throw more deals its way. VinFast. What an exciting story of a self-made billionaire, Pham Nhat Vuong, from Vietnam choosing Chatham County to build electric vehicles. VinFast already has moved back its production timeline from 2024 to 2025, but for that to happen, the company needs money to build its factory and cars. Will that happen? If Vuong continues his support, yes, it will happen, but the bigger macro problem is electric vehicle sales in the U.S. are slowing considerably. Ford cut its F-150 Lightning EV production in half on December 11. Also, VinFast has to qualify for the $7,500 tax credit threshold. It's too expensive for consumers to buy a car without that credit. Office market woes. Interest rates will fall, unemployment will rise, and GDP growth will be cut considerably. So office demand faces extreme headwinds in 2024 as well. The question is, who will survive and give back buildings to the lender? I am not bullish, and I hope I am wrong. Presidential elections? Nothing gets done after June, maybe earlier, period. All we will do is talk about how bad things are or how bad the candidates are running for local, state, and national office. The negativity in the air will suffocate, and we will look to comfort food for composure. But fear not, Ozempic and Wegovy are just a doctor away. And finally, Apple and Research Triangle Park. If Apple fixes its iPad and iPhone production issues in 2024, its engineering team will focus on the next set of products and services, and RTP will then kick into high gear. So maybe 2027? Next year will provide us with a little more insight. And with our time left, we'll read as much as we can of Cameron Snipes' 2023 Year in Review. Leaders lost, but not forgotten. Ingram, Fain, and others made a major impact on the Triangle's success. It's easy to rattle off reasons why the Triangle is often lauded by many in and outside its borders, such as great business climate, intelligent workforce, and attractive cultural amenities. But what can't be overlooked are the efforts of area leaders who contributed mightily to those reasons and the enduring legacies they left behind. Several key Triangle influencers died in 2023 and left behind lasting effects that still permeate the area and further solidify the strong makeup of the Triangle. Former North Carolina Commerce Secretary Jim Fain, who died at age 80 in June, was the state's primary economic recruiter during Governor Mike Easley's term in office. He was instrumental in attracting a number of new companies to the state, including Merck and Fidelity Investments in the Triangle, which now employ thousands of workers. Another pillar was Bob Ingram, former CEO of GlaxoWelcome, now GSK, who died in March at 80. He was a foundational part of the Triangle's pharmaceutical and biotech industries, and he was critical in the funding of life sciences research. A couple of local government leaders, former Cary Mayor Coca Booth and longtime Raleigh Convention Center Director Roger Krupa, were also remembered in 2023 for their lasting impacts on their municipalities. Booth for his impact on the growth of the town of Cary and Krupa for his advocacy for downtown Raleigh. Many businesses and nonprofits often tout the Triangle for its friendliness toward philanthropy. One leader who contributed to this reputation was Cary businessman Anthony Blackman, who founded and owned Atlantic Tire and Service. Blackman, who died in September at age 69, directed millions of dollars in company sales to local nonprofits over many years. Former president of the University of North Carolina System, Molly Broad, died in January at 81. Molly Broad, she served as the third president of the UNC system and was the first female to do so. Other Triangle leaders who left lasting impacts on the area include Kim Saunders, former president and CEO of M&F Bank, Earl Johnson Jr., founder of Southern Industrial Constructors, Dwayne Long, founder of Longistics and a one-time leader of both statewide and national trucking associations, and Walter Royal, the longtime executive chef of the venerable Angus Barn in Raleigh. These are only a few of the individuals who left indelible marks on the Triangle. And we'll go ahead and end on that note, as we have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.